Welcome to Yolitix, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
Hey there, welcome back to Yolitix. You hear that in the background?
Those are actual people.
It's real people. This is not like, dubbed in later on. There's actually a family reunion going on behind us here at Westlake Brewing Company in Deep Ellum, downtown Dallas, Texas.
I think this is the first time I've been in person with you and actually seeing you for, I don't know how long.
I've been moisturizing, can you tell?
Yes, yeah. You look different.
I do.
Somehow
I look
all this time has gone by and you look younger.
Hey, we're at Westlake Brewing Company. They invited us back, so I guess we were kind enough to them last time we came here.
And it's been a long time, though.
Wheeler finally has someone to buy him beer instead of Mrs. Wheeler, who's been stocking the fridge all the time. So we're down here with a friend of ours, yeah. A guy we've known for a long time, 20 years, man. I can't believe it's been that long. Ed Lavandera from CNN is with us here at Westlake today.
And when we say from CNN, you know, people might automatically think like New York, Atlanta. Ed has always been based in Texas, so you've probably seen a lot of his work if you are here in Texas. And he's done a doozy that we have to get into today.
Yeah, what's going on, man?
But more importantly, I'm an alum of WFA.
You are a WFA That's alum. Right. Yeah, you were. You worked here a few years before I got here.
Right. Yeah. Back in the. Oh man. We don't have to talk about dates. Why are we talking about?
Let's not put years on this.
You know, yes, it was before you. It was before you guys got there.
Exactly. Hey, before we get into the topic here today and how we convinced CNN to let him come on the program here with us, let's talk about the beer, because not only did they can say yes, Ed, you can be on Yolitix.
Yeah.
You can also have a beer.
You can toss
with
back
the Jasons.
One with us. Yeah.
On Yolitix. So, Wheeler, you start us off here with your little fruity beer. What do you have in here?
It is not a... Well, actually, it is kind of fruity, I guess, because coffee bean is a fruit, isn't it?
I don't drink coffee either.
This is called a coffee porter. What do you mean you don't drink coffee? You don't drink coffee?
I limit my vices. What's wrong with you? I don't drink.
No, he goes straight to the beer in the morning.
I think you're probably right. So I'm having the coffee porter. What are you drinking there?
Unlike everybody else here at the table, I haven't sipped this yet. You guys are almost done. You're starting your second rounds here in a moment. I'm having a super dry, which is like a Japanese-style lager brewed here in Deep Ellum. So let's taste this one.
And Ed, what are you doing?
I'm having the Yolstar.
I love that.
It's an IPA, huh?
An IPA, which I'm usually not a fan of, but in honor of being on this podcast, the Yolitix, I thought I'd the perfect choice.
How is the Yolstar there?
Very good,
is
actually.
It good?
Yeah, and I'm not an IPA fan, so this is very solid.
You've also never done a podcast before, have you?
No.
Which is stunning, because how long have you been in television? I mean, you know.
I thought we were talking about years days.
Why do you keep going there, Wheeler?
He's been doing this a very long time and has done some extraordinary work, including documentaries, several of them, one of which we're going to be talking about today, but never been on a podcast.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how that's happened. I listen to podcasts all the time. I'm not sure how I'm not on this end.
Let me tell you how
I feel about it after 30 minutes.
Yeah, here's the warning for this podcast. Wheeler asks some long questions. So when we say 30 minutes, about a solid third of that is going to be him asking questions.
So that gives you a chance to breathe. And to eat. We have pizza here at the table with jalapenos on it.
And the hummus is looking good.
The hummus is good. So listen, Ed, we wanted to have you on because a few days ago, you had on a documentary, your fifth one, I believe you said, and it's called Deep in the Pockets of Texas. Did I get the title right?
You did.
Deep in the Pockets of Texas. It was on Sunday night, the 22nd, something like that?
Yeah, this past Sunday night.
On CNN, yes, sir. People can find it right now on CNN.com, I believe, and if they subscribe to the CNN app.
Yeah, if through your provider. I'm not totally exactly, everybody's got a different kind of streaming service, so it totally depends on, what you're subscribed to. And it is re-airing Friday night. Might be a little bit late, but it's airing Friday night, whatever today is, at 10 o'clock Central Time.
Gotcha. And I found it again because I caught the tail end of it. I thought I had recorded it, but I went into the CNN app and went down to special reports, and that's where it is.
And that's where
you look for it.
And the documentary, if you didn't get a chance to see it, or if you did get a chance to see it, we're going to get into kind of all of it here. The documentary really talks about money and influence. In the state of Texas here, too. It reports on two oil men from West Texas, Tim Dunn and Ferris Wilkes. These aren't household names that we all know.
I had never heard of either of these two guys, Ed, before you did this.
But, these two guys are, every few months when there's an article in the newspaper or you do an update and there's campaign finance reports and, Greg Abbott has raised this much money, Beto O'Rourke has raised this much money, and then you start kind of going down the list or whatever. you know, these guys are often mentioned in the 25th paragraph of that story. And so they're not household names. You know, I don't think most people get to that part of the article and start drawing the connections between their donations and what is happening in Texas.
But they're not household names, but these guys are kind of the puppeteers who are really running things behind the scenes here, right?
Incredibly influential and have been for at least the last 15 years or so. And it is stunning to me. I mean, there's one moment in the documentary where I wanted to kind of show people that that these guys are, like, nobody knows who they are. Even the most Republican of voters, you were walking up and down the street over and over and over again, you'd ask people, nobody knew who they were.
What gets me, though, is how Republican candidates and Republican legislators absolutely know who these two are. When you put this whole piece together, it's an hour-long documentary, and you really get the sense that these two guys are pulling the strings all over Austin, and you go, that can't be. It can't just be two people in Texas. There's a lot of money in Texas. We know that. It can't just be two rich guys in Texas who are having that much influence. But then you broke down how they do it, Ed, and I think that is fascinating, that not only do they write checks to candidates, there's all these super PACs that they write checks to, and those super PACs write checks to the candidates.
Absolutely. So you start kind of peeling back the layers of all these different groups that can donate, Empower Texans, Defend Texas Liberty, Texas Public Policy Foundation, mm-hmm. you know, all of these things. And I think most people's eyes kind of gloss over at all this stuff. They seem like, you know, kind of normal, quiet, grassroots operations. But, you know, the fact is that they're run by very smart, very sophisticated political players. And in large part, that's kind of what's going on. And we really wanted to take all of that reporting that has been kind of done here and there for years and years and try to put it all together in a way that you could kind of digest exactly how it all kind of unfolds.
So let's lay out who these two guys are. Tim Dunn, Ferris Wilkes, they're from out in West Texas, Midland, Odessa area, I believe. Tell us who they are, why they're involved in politics, Ed.
Well, Ferris Wilkes, you know, lives in Cisco, Texas, and a small little town out near Abilene. They made an enormous amount of money in the fracking business. And he also runs a small church out there. He's the pastor of a church. And he lives out there in Cisco in this massive, massive compound. It's like, it almost looks like a palace, and his church is just down the street. So, you know, they're very entrenched in Cisco. You go anywhere in town, everybody knows who they are. And Tim Dunn worked in came up in that he runs a company called Crown Quest out of Midland, similar background where they've made a pile of money in the oil business, and Tim Dunn has also created a school out there. There's a church that he's very influential in and very connected to, and all of that is very close to where he lives. So, you know, a lot of times people in the kind of the Texas political world, they call them the West Texas oil money. Mm.
You know, you mentioned the church with both men here, and I think that's a really key pillar of this, you know, when you watch this documentary, how much of a role their faith plays in this and how much of a role that plays when they choose candidates and when they choose issues. Talk just a little bit about how interwoven that is when they are dealing with politicians in Austin. Oh, well, and at the local level too, I suppose. I mean, they do races from school board on up.
Right. We talked to Shelley Luther, who you guys have covered extensively for the last few years. We asked her, and it's like, you know, what is it that they want to know? You know, you essentially have to go meet these guys to get their money. You kind of get put through the interview process, if you will. And they ask you a bunch of questions. You know, Shelley Luther told us, you know, one of the things that, you know, they wanted to know, are you a good Christian candidate? And obviously that plays a key role into their decision making.
Mm-hmm. And Shelley Luther, just to refresh our listeners' memory, she's a Dallas salon owner who, during COVID, the initial shutdown, she defied the order to close her salon. She became a hero in the right, and she ended up running for a couple of offices unsuccessfully. Here's a question I have, though, Ed. There are a lot of billionaires in Texas. You know that, man. How did these two guys, Tim Dunn and Ferris Wilkes, how did they, you know, emerge to the top and have such influence with our leaders?
Well, one of the things that they did is through a group called Empower Texans.
They started that group,
they
right?
Start, Tim Dunn, and there's another gentleman named Michael Quinn Sullivan who kind of runs mm-hmm. that operation. So years ago, if you're a Republican primary voter, you have probably received in the mail this thing known as the Texas Scorecard. And maybe you think something of it, maybe you don't have any idea who's behind it or what the deal is. But that scorecard essentially ranks Republican lawmakers on how conservative they are and whether or not they've cast the right vote, if you will.
And a lot of people make their decisions when they go into the voting booth based upon what that scorecard says.
Yeah, and remember, Republican. Let's break it down. Republican primary this year, 2022, there are, I think, a little more than 17 million registered voters in Texas out of 30 million people.
Right.
Less than 2 million Republican voters, not Democrat, just on less than 2 million people voted in the Republican primary.
Hmm.
So the amount of influence that that small group of voters has on Texas politics is enormous. And I don't think the average voter understands that. You know, you hear a lot about the lack of participation in the voting process.
Right.
You know, and in a lot of these elections, the Republican primary is the only thing that matters.
They're choosing the winner. Some for
these,
November, because
right,
there may not people, be a Democrat, or a Democrat may have no chance of winning in that area.
Exactly. So that Republican primary, and if you really break down what these guys have done, they're incredibly smart. They're worth billions of dollars, and it doesn't take but $1 million or so to really move the needle in a small Texas state house race in East Texas or out in West Texas. So the amount of influence you get for the amount of money you're spending is really stunning.
I think that's part of this, too, because you hear two Texas billionaires and you think, well, they're dropping crazy amounts of money. I was surprised in watching the documentary how little money they're spending, actually. I mean, it's a lot of money to me, but it doesn't sound like it would be a lot of money to them. But, you know, the whole point that you're making there is, in these races, I think we all assume that these races just have so much money flowing through these candidates. Some of them don't, and all it takes is, you know, a shot like you're talking about. And in a lot of these races, you showed us how much of that candidate's total take came from these two men and their affiliated organizations. And it's substantial.
Several times we heard from people who said, you know, such and such candidate would not have stood a chance had it not been for the Wilkes and Dunn money.
Hmm.
So, and Senator Bob Dole, the East Texas Republican, and let's be very clear, many of the people that we spoke with, like, you cannot mistake any of these people for you know, crazy liberals or anything like that. Like, they are incredibly conservative Republican officials who have worked in the state for a long time, and they will tell you that, you know, like, I think Bob Dole was telling us that Bob Hall, the current senator from that district, I don't think he had much of an idea of who this guy was until all of a sudden he showed up and he's able to send out all these flyers and he's able to, you know, and it was, you know, from Bob Dole's standpoint, it was like, this guy became a very viable candidate because all of a sudden he's able to afford flyers that end up in tens of thousands of people's mailboxes, and all of a sudden you've got some name recognition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the end of the day, I don't think people really understand the role money plays in politics. When we talk about so-and-so raised so much money or an opponent raised a lot of money, money helps candidates of whichever party define what they're talking about, define themselves so they don't get defined later on by another candidate. What you just mentioned, Bob Dole. In the documentary, you talked to Bob Dole, who is a former Republican state senator. You talked to Kel Seliger, another former Republican state senator who is out in West Texas. Did you have trouble getting these senators to, or these former senators to talk about Ferris Wilkes and Tim Dunn?
Took a while. It took a while to get them. And you
well,
know,
why do you think they talked to you?
A couple different reasons. I think you have a divide in the Republican Party here in Texas. I'm talking kind of on the state level,
right,
where you have a lot of Republicans who do not feel comfortable with the way this is going. And so this was their
movement to the right of the party.
Yes, the what they view as kind of the extreme right and no longer really being kind of governed and influenced by good politics, in their words. So I think they felt kind of compelled by it. Bob Dole is no longer a state senator, so he's...
he's not beholden to any fundraiser.
He's not fundraising. He doesn't have any elections coming up. And Kel Seliger is exactly the kind of guy who we're talking about. He has chosen to retire. You know, he was probably seen as a victim of the recent redistricting and kind of drawn out. And if you notice that, we end the show on how Kel Seliger is no longer running. It's an open seat. a man named Kevin Sparks is the man who won the Republican primary out there in West Texas. Kel Seliger, for those of you who don't know, represents far West Texas, basically from Amarillo down into Midland. So he's essentially Tim Dunn's state senator. He's retiring. He's no longer running. Kel Seliger's seat is going to be taken over by a gentleman named Kevin Sparks, who is a friend of Tim Dunn's out there in Midland. And he's running unopposed, back to our original point, he's running unopposed in November.
But let me ask you again.
I think he felt compelled. I don't have anything to lose at this point.
But as far as how these guys, with all the money in Texas, as Jason just mentioned, how Tim Dunn and Ferris Wilkes got to where they are, they do the scorecard that Empower Texans does. It's very influential, that a lot of conservative voters look at. They donate a lot. Any other reason you think that these guys really just kind of surfaced to become so powerful and influential, with Republicans?
Well, it's hard to get the kind of money. For example, if I'm a candidate and I don't have a lot of name recognition, I got to make thousands and thousands and thousands of phone calls to get, $1 million, right? If you're going 100 bucks at a time, you're going to be working the phones non-time. If all of a sudden one guy shows up and just gives you that pot of gold with one phone call, what are you going to do? So there's that aspect of it. And then the other thing that makes them so influential is that scorecard is key, because as one person told us, if you don't vote the way they want you to vote, you can expect somebody to run against you in the primary.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden that makes your life a lot more complicated. And I thought one of my favorite quotes of all of this was someone who told us, is like, even if their candidate loses, they win because chances are that they've pushed the winning candidate farther to the right.
Yeah, because they don't have necessarily the greatest track record in every election. A lot of their candidates don't make it, Shelley Luther being one of them. But you're making a great point there. Just by entering somebody who pulls the other Republican in the race far to the right to try to convince those primary voters, you've succeeded in what you're trying to do if you're these two men, by pulling politics more to the right in Texas.
And let's look at the example that I think the average voter out there in Texas has probably picked up on. Because a lot of this documentary started with this idea of Texas passing some of the most conservative legislation that has made national headlines. That's how we got to covering a lot of this, whether it be the abortion bill, whether it be restricting voting access,
bathroom bill,
all this litany. And so we're kind of asking ourselves, what is this? What's going on here? Well, if you look at, for example, Greg Abbott's opponent, Don Huffines, was largely funded by the Wilkes and Dunn network. And what has Greg Abbott done in the last year and a half? He's pushed further right.
Right.
So I think it was one of the Republican lawmakers said, they have an enormous amount of influence over Greg Abbott without even giving him any money.
Wow. And over the state as
over
well.
The state.
They're pushing him farther to the right.
Right, which is exactly what they want.
Wow. We keep on going back to this whole notion of the scorecard that shows how conservative individual legislators are based upon how they vote. And, it's one thing to go, voters are looking at that and they're making decisions based upon that. But you connect the dots in this piece where you're showing that it's not just voters looking at it, it's the lawmakers themselves, and they're sort of checking, where do I stand right now on the scorecard? And they're even being told in some circumstances during a legislative session, this is a quote-unquote scorecard vote, so, vote accordingly.
That was really stunning to me. Because how many times do we watch the video of the lawmakers on the floor and they're walking around to each other's chairs and they're talking about it?
And you always wonder what's being said.
How many times do we sit there as reporters and be like, man, I really wish I could eavesdrop on that conversation. It's probably pretty enlightening to what I should, what's going on there. It's like, now we kind of have an idea.
Yeah. But both of these guys are preachers, Tim Dunn and Ferris Wilkes. You pointed out earlier in the podcast and in the documentary on CNN. Why haven't either of them run for office? Any idea?
Well, if we'd been able to talk to them, that would have been one of the questions. They are incredibly, I don't know if secretive is the right word. They definitely love operating behind the scenes. They were never going to talk to us.
You reached out to them several times.
For months. And we reached out to, people around them who could, put our requests in, and we called them directly.
Did you get some
very
back?
Did you?
No, after a while, they kind of just went, you know, radio silent. And, you know, I think I got Wilkes's assistant on the phone at his office one day. And was like, and she, you know, I think there was a moment in the documentary which we used just to kind of illustrate that.
It's a very polite no.
Oh, no.
But it's definitely a no.
No, it's definitely a no. Yeah, don't sit around waiting for the call. And look, we talk about all of this not as a it's not my job to pass judgment on what these guys the merits of what they're passing or not, but I think it's important for viewers and listeners to be fully equipped with the information, and then they can decide, you know, how they feel about it. And from that standpoint, I think it was, you know, a little bit of a disservice to voters if they had spoken, you know, they would explain what it is that, you know, they're what their goals are, what their agenda is, and, I think those are fair, legitimate questions.
Yeah, talk about some of those. What are some of their biggest issues? You kind of mentioned a moment ago. What are some of the biggest issues that these guys have been behind that people would know about here in this state?
Well, if you notice right now, and it's very subtle, again, you got to follow this stuff very closely, but if you've noticed in the last few days, you're starting to see a lot of lawmakers talk about school choice.
Mm-hmm.
And repeatedly we've heard over
private
and over.
School vouchers and things like that.
Right. Yeah. And that is one of their, if not the most driving force, the biggest driving force, I think, behind what their goals are.
So basically, they're trying to take public school dollars and funnel those dollars to private schools through voucher programs so that parents have the choice to take their kids out of public school and go to a private school of their choosing, which could be a religious school, let's say, and the public money pays for that.
Right, and that has been a goal of these men for quite some time. And again, this is one of those things, it's not the sexiest of issues, right? It's a little bit in the weeds.
But this affects
millions, you know,
and
everybody.
Millions of Texas children and their parents, too.
And it has had virtually no support in the areas that are the most conservative in the state. So this has come up before, but one of the reasons why it has never really succeeded is because rural Texas, which is the reddest part of the state, has been against it very much, because in a lot of these small communities, public schools are the kind of like the central part of the community,
backbone,
the backbone of the community. Thank you. And it's also, you know, one of the bigger employers. So there has been a lot of hesitancy in rural Texas to kind of do anything that would cripple public education.
So this is coming up now. It has been in the news a lot lately. Governor Abbott saying that he is really wanting to get private school vouchers passed. On Inside Texas Politics not too long ago, we talked about this because this has been talked about at, you know, legislative session after legislative session. And now all of a sudden it seems like it's going to be one of the top priorities when legislators return in January. What are these guys doing specifically, though? Are they giving money? Are they saying, hey, we're going to judge you on this? What are Tim Dunn and Ferris Wilkes doing, though, to really make this an issue now?
Well, look at what has happened in the last couple of years. We profiled the case of James Whitfield in Colleyville. He was the principal who was driven out of his job, accused of pushing critical race theory, which he says is nonsense. If you listen to him and you listen to Zach Maxwell, who was the chief of staff that we interviewed for a state legislator, you know, their goal is to, in the words of Zach Maxwell, is to kind of cripple public education, knock the legs out from under it. How do you do that?
I think that was one of the most stunning quotes that I saw in the entire piece. And I thought, I bet a lot of people have never thought about this here in Texas. They don't know that this is going on behind the scenes, that this is a project.
They believe, and they kind of tell us, that they believe that one of the reasons these issues are getting so much attention and that they're pushing them so hard is that it's to undermine trust in the public education. So if you get a bunch of people who think, oh, public schools are just indoctrinating my kids, they're, you know, CRT, and if you're against all of that, then all of a sudden you're going to be much more open to the idea of listening to school choice. If those guys believe that all of this is part of that kind of mission and that goal to kind of undermine public education. So it's on the surface, it looks like it's a kind of a very grassroots kind of thing, something that's popped up in the last couple of years. But these people will argue that it's actually a little bit more organized than that, that this is part of their end goal.
And we've seen this growing, this momentum that has been building even at school board meetings in different school districts where it has gotten very contentious in the last school year. And that's why, you know, I brought up that this isn't just state legislators that we're talking about who are receiving some of this money. It's down to the school board level, because that's where, as you mentioned in the piece, you know, they touch you the closest. I mean, that's the politicians who are the closest to you are the ones who affect your life the most.
Right, right. And I think they understand that. They know how to mobilize on a very grassroots level, and that's why you can get a coalition of parents, and they believe that things aren't going the way they want them to go in a school district. And they mobilize. They become very kind of politically active, and that becomes a huge influence. And it drove someone like James Whitfield out of his job.
And for our listeners who have probably heard CRT, critical race theory, out there, CRT is illegal in Texas.
Right.
It's also important to point out that Republicans have run this state for the past 20 plus years. So if something's going on in public schools, it's been happening while they've been in office over the last two decades.
With total power.
With 100% power. You mentioned a moment ago, Ed, about, and it mentioned in the documentary, how Dunn and Wilkes they backed Don Huffines, the farther right Republican challenger to Greg Abbott. Why didn't they like Abbott?
I think, and again, without having spoken to them.
Even though you tried.
Yeah, we tried. I think Huffines represents and is open to many of the things that they would like to see, probably on the school issue, and one of the big things I think the COVID restrictions also played a huge role. You know, Greg Abbott has kind of been taking it beat up from both sides, right? Like,
right.
You know, he's for the number of Democrats and liberal Democrats in Texas, they think he's done a terrible job, and he's getting hammered from the far right. So he's trying to navigate, I think, this. This narrow path, but there are some people who will tell you that they don't understand why exactly. Like, you know, Greg Abbott, what did he get? Like more than 60% in the primary. It wasn't really that close.
Right.
So some people kind of wonder, is like, why was he so worried about these people? Well, he's extremely.
Why was he?
There's someone else who won't talk to us all that much, but.
Well, but as you mentioned, it pushed him to the right, though. They got their way there. And it sounds like when listening to this, as you know, in aggregate, if you're one of these candidates who gets this money after you've been interviewed by these guys and they feel good about you and so forth, it's not just a matter of, okay, good, got the check, and now I can just proceed and not have to worry about this again until, you know, maybe I'm up for re-election. It sounds like you get regular calls, and it sounds like it doesn't take a lot to run afoul if you tend to vote one way or the other that, you know, maybe they weren't looking for.
Yeah, Zach Maxwell, the chief of staff, regular phone calls. You know, it's almost like they say jump, you say how high.
Mm.
And Bob Dole kind of said the same thing. It's like you cannot deviate too far from the list.
Think about that, though. That is a lot of power if you're talking about two men, essentially, in a state this size who are able to make regular phone calls like that. And as you say, it's sort of the, you know, how high do you need me to jump kind of thing with multiple lawmakers. That is a lot of power concentrated in two people.
Yeah, and you're not even the elected official. But I also want to be clear, too, is voters have supported this, right? So,
some cases unwittingly, but yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, if voters had such a huge problem with it, then they wouldn't have voted. Now, would their votes be different if they fully understood what was going on? It's hard to say. But
you did talk to one guy though who had no idea and said, maybe that is something that I should have seen and read. That might have made me think differently.
Right, and he was someone who voted for Shelley Luther instead of the incumbent Republican, and you know you kind of made him second guess. But I think to a large extent, voters in Texas have been comfortable, clearly because they've won elections on some level. So I don't want to make it sound like we're bashing these ideas. They have, to be fair, they have found some support.
And you mentioned that you tried to reach out multiple times to Tim Dunn and Ferris Wilkes too. You point out in the piece, Dunn said he's spending the money to make state government more transparent to voters, more accountable to voters, I think was the word that you used. Wilkes says he wants to elect principled conservative leaders as well. When it comes to money, though, I suppose you and your team went through all these fundraising records because you've been working on this for a while. Dunn donated $18 million to candidates over the last decade. Ferris Wilkes, $11 million too. Here's what I'd heard this in the past, but I hadn't looked into this too much. Texas is just one of 10 states that let people make unlimited contributions to state political candidates. I didn't realize that, but that I don't want to say it's a loophole because it is what it is. That is fueling these guys, right?
Right, right. And I believe, so that's why you can get, like, Shelley Luther's campaign, I think, I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head. It was, like, close to 90%,
yeah.
You know? There's a real question as to whether or not she could have even have been a viable candidate if she doesn't get that money.
She'd have the money, yeah.
You know? And that happens in a lot of places. And Bob Duell made that point. He said, you know, it turns people who aren't necessarily qualified to be a lawmaker into viable candidates instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I think it's interesting the device that you used in this, because you did try repeatedly to talk to these two very influential men. And again, a lot of people do agree with their beliefs and their politics. And I thought it was really interesting, though, that we were able to hear from them and able to get into their thought process and into their minds, because you were able to pull up some of their appearances in church where they're speaking. And it does give you insight into sort of what drives them. And you spoke to people who, you know, had worked closely with them about what drives them. And it sounds like faith is a big part of this. And it is a very specific way of thinking.
Right.
Faith-wise.
Some of their strongest critics, and we touch on this in the documentary, is that they believe, the critics believe, that these two men are pushing what is often described as Christian nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
That there's essentially, and we had an expert talking about this in the show, so I talked about how essentially, I think in the expert's words, that the idea of the separation of church and state is a one-way wall, right? It's to keep government out of the church, but not necessarily church out of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And it is definitely a very kind of Christian view of the influence that government should have. This whole idea of Christian nationalism is something that has really terrified many of the critics who have been kind of going after Ferris Wilkes and Tim Dunn. And this expert, you know, he believed that much of what these men have said publicly and what is available known about them is that, you know, they flirt very close, intensely with this idea of Christian nationalism. That was the types of questions we had hoped to kind of ask them, but they weren't going to do that.
What kind of feedback have you had on this?
It's been interesting. The two themes that I keep hearing over and over again is, I had no idea, and it's terrifying. And you know, the terrifying part is you know, that's not for me to decide. It's for, you know, but I am fascinated by the first part of a lot of the feedback I've gotten, is that I had no idea. And I really think it kind of speaks to, I think, some of the things that we talked about before. It's like, these are the guys that get talked about deep in a newspaper story about campaign finance reports, and most people just don't get to that. And you know, I don't fault them, but I think it's important for readers and viewers to educate themselves as much as possible. Like, and this is really, really hard work, and it falls on us as journalists to kind of tell these stories as clearly as possible. And I think you mentioned this, Jason, that it was seeing it all in one place,
mm-hmm.
and that was
mm-hmm.
as we were reporting this over the last 7 or 8 months. Like, that's kind of the point where we got to. And it's like, you know, we see bits and pieces here and there, but then there's never really one big piece that connects all these dots in one kind of easy to digest kind of way. And that was that, as soon as we kind of like reached that realization, man, we were we were kind of like, you know, we were going running down the hill. At that point, it was like, oh, this is all very clear to us now. This is a good way to kind of tackle this issue.
And I'll close.
Let me ask a follow-up to that, Ed. Did you have any Republican pushback? Anybody say, no, this is not what's going on out there at all?
Many of the Republicans, that was the other real important. You know, we wanted to use examples of how this affects certain people. So you hear from Libby Gonzalez, you hear from James Whitfield. Those are kind of the people on the edges of,
right.
of what the reality of a lot of these laws are and how it affects everyday people. But to get into the nitty gritty of exactly how this works, it was hugely important that we hear from the Republicans who are in this and living
right.
this and experiencing this. I think there's a state lawmaker, a Republican from Fort Worth, Charlie Green, I believe.
Aguirre, yeah.
Charlie, and I think he tweeted yesterday, someone had shared the link to what we were, to our reporting, and his quote was, I've lived this.
Hmm.
You know, so there are a lot of Republicans who know firsthand. You know, if you look at Dan Branch, the former state rep here in the
ran for attorney general against Ken Paxton. Ken Paxton defeated him, yeah.
Exactly. So, who was largely supported by the Wilkes and Dunn network. So, you know, there are some people who tell you, it's like, there's no Ken Paxton today if it wasn't for these guys, you know, bankrolling his early runs into office. So,
Ted Cruz is another.
Yeah, in large part. So, yeah. The Republicans who have spoken with us kind of come from that wing. I think there are, you know, I would imagine those close to Wilkes and Dunn who've just really kind of shut off the faucet talking to us. I would imagine they don't totally agree. Although Michael Quinn Sullivan, the night that the documentary aired, he had a tweet, and they haven't really responded, but he had a tweet that said, you know, when your enemies are busy complaining about how powerful you are, it's best to just sit back, be polite, and listen. So I think that kind of speaks to the way they're...
He's probably right there, though, too. And, you know, and it does underscore the fact that whatever you think about this, you know, these two men who have this money and are able to spend it this way aren't doing anything wrong.
No.
These are the rules of the game, and they're just playing the game as the rules lay out.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And again, this is not to, you know, I'm sure, you know, people will say, oh, you're just trying to, you know, cast judgment on what they're doing. It's like, no, that's not what the goal of this is. The goal of this is to show people kind of how the process works.
And that's enlightening when you start connecting the dots and you go, oh, wow, yeah. okay. My last thing that I wanted to close with was, you know, we think about this here in Texas, but, you know, the point is made in this documentary, you know, that this is something that they want to take national. And we have seen that. We've seen things that have started in Texas, like SB 8, the bill that allowed people to sue other people for abortions. That got copied in other states. And this is something that, you know, they're actively pursuing, is to sort of take this thing beyond the incubator of Texas.
And I think not only that, I think it's easy to say, oh, they want to influence presidential politics. But if you notice, like on a national level, if you pay attention to what's happening in places like Arizona, places like Pennsylvania, where is that extreme right wing of the Republican Party, the people who are election deniers and open to that kind of the 2020 election deniers, what are they talking about being the most focused on right now? They're focused on school board races. They're focused on county commissioners or whatever these local races are, school boards. These guys have been doing that. They're ahead of the curve on that. It's almost like the rest of the country has kind of woken up to the influence that these guys have. And they're incredibly motivated. They have incredibly motivated followers and people who believe in their ideology. They're highly motivated.
And a template that works.
Ed, do you think the state legislature, last thing for me, do you think the state legislature would try to close this up as far as fundraising goes and donors go, that a person can only give X amount of money? I mean, it seems like they could fix.
It probably depends on if you're one of the candidates getting a lot of the money.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But you know, they could fix their own situation here. If you have people like Kel Seliger and Bob Dewell talking to you, former, you know, Texas lawmakers, I wonder if anyone would ever even consider something like
you
that.
You talk to more of these guys than I do on a weekly basis. I don't see it. I got to be honest. I don't see it. You know, Texas. I travel around the country for CNN. And, you know, Texas is one of the most difficult places to get open records. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most difficult places to kind of get, like, the most basic, transparent information of government. And if you kind of follow that model, it's hard to think that they would kind of want to be able to kind of shut down.
Plus, how do you
if you've ever tried to navigate the Texas Ethics Commission website?
it is tough. No, it
It'll take you all day.
When you're trying to dig up these numbers, it's hard as hell.
It's not easy.
No, I'm with you there, man.
Well, plus, how do you get people on your side with this? I mean, so many people decry, like, oh, there's too much money in our politics. Usually, I think they feel that way if the other side that, you know, if they're with a candidate or a side, if the other side is spending a lot of money, they don't like it. But, you know, how do you get people behind that? Because people say it, but it's usually not one of the things that they go into a voting booth caring about.
And cast a vote about. Did you look up Wheeler to see how much he donates?
Oh, my God.
I don't give anybody any money ever.
That's the second hour of the documentary.
Ed Lavandera, everybody. CNN correspondent, a longtime friend of mine. Hey, man, good work on this. It's fascinating someone did connect the dots on this because we've heard these names. These are two people I've never interviewed, Tim Dunn or Ferris Wilkes. But to see their operation and to have it all put together like this is enlightening. And I hope people take the time to actually watch this on CNN.com or wherever they can find
it on
CNN.
App.
I just want to add, I came up in Texas news hanging around the state legislature way back in the day.
Yeah.
And to date myself a little bit, I was a...
Oh,
was
now a, we're going
to
do
we'll
it.
We'll do it. It's the end. I'm going to hope like only four people got to the end of this listening to me. But, you know, I came up around... covering Ann Richards and George W. Bush. Yeah. I was a senior in college.
Those were interesting times.
Working for Channel 8, WFA back in the day in their Austin bureau. And so I really think it's incumbent. Back in those days, you know, every station in Texas had an Austin bureau covering these things. And, you know, I just think it's incumbent on, and if I can help in any way, I want to, because I really think that Texas reporters, we need, you know, it's a tough time. It's a tough media world that we live in right now. But us doing our best to tell these stories, I think, is really invaluable to voters out there. And you know, we need viewer support. We need reader support. And so that we can go around and do our best covering all this stuff, because it is not easy. This took us months to kind of weave together in a way that I hope is useful to viewers. That's just not something you just wake up one day and decide that, you know, I'm going to have it on by the 6 o'clock news tonight.
I think that is a great point because, you know, so many of us now are civics ignorant and, you know, life is busy. We don't have time to keep up with all of these things. You're not making any judgments in these pieces. You're laying it out there for everyone to decide what they think about this. And it's a fascinating education in what is really going on in Austin. We see the veneer all the time. We don't usually see behind the scenes how the sausage is made. So if you can find it, please look for it in, you know, special reports there on your CNN app if you have like a streaming service or whatever. And again, it's called Deep in the Pockets of Texas.
Ed, good to see you, man.
Oh, you guys are wonderful. Thanks.